Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the Appalachian Podcast. I am your host, Simon Head. One last announcement before the show happens. Actually, January 27th, there's a live show at 603 Markham Street. The place is called The Central. It's a live taping of the podcast. The doors are at 5:30 and the show ends at 8 p.m. It's an early show, so you can get there early, have some dinner, watch the show, get home before your favorite TV show. My guests on the show are Miss Stella Panacci and Justin Small. Also, Cameron Carpenter will be playing music. So this is a brand new thing, so I really want you to come out and check it out, okay? Because I'm a little bit nervous that it'll just be me and the guests and a whole lot of empty chairs. So please come to it, okay? Thanks. Tell your friends, too. This is the last time I'm going to say thank you to Death Wish Coffee Company for sending me free coffee. I am officially out. Everybody can go to deathwishcoffee.com, order. I know the American dollar is really strong and the Canadian dollar is not so good right now. But you can go there and maybe ask them for a product code or ask them for a discount because they are good people and they will do you good. This episode is brought to you by InsightRecorders.com. InsightRecorders.com is a studio where you can record. And the only reason it's on this show as a sponsor is because of its online mixing capabilities. Okay, so if you send a song you kind of recorded and it's kind of cool, send it to the Insight Recorders online mixing service and you can get a much better, more realized mix, master, also have it prepared for printing to CD, although nobody really does that anymore. But you can just have something that's just a little bit better, has a little bit more sizzle, is that a word? It just pops. That's another word. Those are words that studio people use. I don't know why I just said it, but I did. Go to Insight Recorders for more details, rates, and all that good stuff. Affiliate programs. First one, Amazon.com, Amazon.ca, or Amazon.co.uk. These are affiliate programs. So when you go to the Appalog.ca, the homepage, you'll see banners on the right side. And from there, you can click on those banners, bookmark them. And when you shop, you go to those bookmarks that you've bookmarked. And you can support the show by buying stuff on Amazon. You can purchase pretty much anything on Amazon. It's awesome. Do that. Also, on that same page, appalog.ca, there's a musician's friend banner. You can click on that, also bookmark it, and also support the show by shopping a musician's friend. While you're on appalog.ca, you can also go to the Appalog shop. Appalog.ca/shop. And you can pre-order the new acoustic album that I'm working on right now. And you can buy a shirt. And if you're from the Durham region of Ontario, you'll get a hand delivery. I'll drop it off and I'll throw it in your mailbox. Okay. Want to let you know about my Patreon campaign. Patreon is a pledging website where you can pledge as little as much per month to support the show. I have two amazing patrons right now, and that is Michael Pitts and Curtis Pippin. What Patreon does for me is supports my gas fees and my hosting fees. And you can pledge it, like I said, pledge as little as much as you want, and you can cancel at any time. Go to facebook.com/appalogpod and like the show there. Follow me on Twitter at SimonHead666, and subscribe to the show on iTunes. This is important. So when you get your podcast on your phone or on your iPod, search out Appalog Podcast, and you can review the show, you can rate the show, all within that. You can't do when you've actually got it, when you've subscribed to it already, but you can go get there to subscribe to the show, and give it a review. Give it 5 stars. That would be awesome. Tell your friends about it too. Okay? And that is all I have to do. Hear that? That's paper. I'm putting the paper over there. Today on the show, a very old good friend of mine, Greg Norrie. Greg Norrie is the founding member of a band called Treble Charger. He's also a guy who's managed, produced, owned studios. And he has presently moved back up to Sault Ste. Marie, where his hometown is, to be, first of all, close to his parents and his family. But also, he's got this new amazing adventure that he's starting on, and a new chapter. And I was so glad to meet up with him up there and talk. I hadn't talked to him forever. And I think you hear in this interview that it's two people who are just getting caught up. You know, we haven't talked to each other for so long. We have a respect for each other. And everybody, please welcome my friend, Greg Norrie, on the Applog Podcast. Oh man! Welcome to Dustin Jones's Tidal Records recording studio.
Yeah,
it's kind of neat.
Pretty nice down here. I've heard a lot about it, but I have never been.
Well, he's kind of like the go-to guy now for Sue bands, right? Like,
I think so.
Yeah.
I believe this is the only studio in town.
Get out of here!
I think so.
I'm moving here.
No, you know what? I could get in a lot of trouble for saying that because there's probably seven of them.
Yeah, yeah. At this size, this reminds me of being in my basement when I was in my basement back in the old days.
Oh yeah,
Toronto.
Remember where you and I started back in the Stinky Cheese?
That's right.
Studio.
We first met at where did we? Yeah, because I worked for Treble Charger, and then it was at the old Signal to Noise.
Yes,
which is now a bank.
Is it a bank?
Yeah.
They got rid of that cheese, Portuguese cheese store?
Yeah.
That was the stinkiest store I've ever been in my life. How could anybody have worked there?
The grocery store?
Yeah, remember how much it stunk?
Yeah, yeah. I told a story once that you used to get free water from there.
Yeah.
Because you used to just grab a bottle on the way through.
Yeah, they stupidly had that nice cooler that didn't have a door on it.
Right by the door.
By the door of the studio where bands would walk in.
And remember the water? It looked like the girl was doing something.
Oh, you mean on the label?
Performing fellatio.
That's
on the
right. They were pink. They were pink labels or
That's
something.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It looked very
with
dirty.
The lady on it.
Very multi. Yeah, we kind of go back now, man. Like, it was funny. We were just
What year was that?
I want to say 98.
Okay.
98 or 99.
No, it's got to be earlier than that.
You think so? Well, because I moved to Toronto 97.
No.
But yeah? We met and worked together.
You moved to Toronto 97. Oh, so I guess it was that late. Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think what was happening is Trevor was still in Treble Charger.
Uh-huh.
And we were going up. Mark Crane introduced me to you guys because we went up to North Bay and did a show and one in Sudbury. And that was the time this dude got up and played the solo in Red.
Oh, yeah. That's your wedding bill.
And he rocked it. He played it, and you were like, watch the whole thing, like, holy shit. You were blown away by this kid's chops.
Oh,
I remember that in
right.
Sudbury. That was my first trip with you guys. You were down in Toronto, because you went down as NC-17, right? Or were you up here in the Sioux and
no,
then went down?
No, we were never a band in the Sioux.
Okay, yeah.
So we left here. We all went to school to various universities and colleges, and then we all, like, maybe 3 years after we left the Sioux, we all met up in Toronto and joined and started the band.
Right. And that was NC-17, and then...
That was NC-17.
And then the name changed.
And then we got the letter to cease and desist with the name from a movie industry in Hollywood.
Did you try and use it to your advantage? Or is it just too
no,
big a
it
fish?
No, scared the hell out of us.
Yeah,
like, at that point, it's like, whoa, we got like some Hollywood lawyer sending us a cease and desist letter.
Awesome.
And we immediately changed our name.
Yeah. Who came up with the name?
I think it might have been Bill. It had to have been Bill. I think so.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know it was a movie rating.
I just thought,
it's NC-17. That's
that
such
cool.
A that's a cool little
it sounds
that's
like cool
the
name,
old
yeah.
letters and numbers
yeah,
game
yeah, yeah,
for
yeah.
a band name.
Yeah.
Actually, I never even thought of that. That it was the Sum 41 thing and then NC-17. I never even thought of that.
That's your thing, man. You're the guy, the go-to guy.
Yeah.
But then you went to Treble Charger.
For Blink 182.
That's right. Remember the whole thing about numbers bands? There was this thing that said...
Fuck, we were one.
You were number...
Damn it. It's a good thing I need to write a thank you letter to that lawyer. Thanks for saving us on that one.
And Treble Charger put out some great records and got some awards and some accolades and... Some great tours.
Yeah, we got inducted into the Indie Rock Band Hall of Fame, and I have yet to be able to find that building or where it is.
I think
I'm convinced it's a hallway.
The bovine. It's the basement
could be
a in the bovine.
Hallway of fame.
Yeah, it's a basement. It's a basement.
Yeah, somewhere, but I just don't know where it is. But we got a nice plaque for that.
Well, cool. Yeah. Did you have to buy it?
No. I don't think we had to buy it, but having said that, they only gave us one. So, yes, you I had to go and buy the second. Yeah, because it was like, what do you want to do? Cut it in half?
Like the Stanley Cup. You get it for the first 6 months, and I'll get it for the second. Well, that's very good. I mean, it's honestly, it's great to actually get some sort of recognized, you know.
Yeah, no kidding. Honestly.
It's a very cool thing.
And not only that, but it happened about 3 years ago. It got our band back together, which really? I am so grateful for. And I got to say something about that. First of all, Ralph James, you know, the
yes, I do.
Agent, yeah. Orange, the agency group, he came up to us this past summer at a festival we were playing in Southern Ontario and said, I just want to tell you guys that you're a way better band now than you ever were back then.
Just like, shooting for
really?
The
head. Because I don't even think we're that good now, so we must have really sucked back then.
No, that's untrue. You guys were great.
No, I got to say, it's a really weird thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you feel because you still play live.
Yeah.
Okay, do you feel like you're just like a way better musician now as you've gotten older?
I feel more confident with what I have. I use what I have to my advantage.
Do you think you're a better player?
I think I'm a better player. I think I'm a more wary player of what I'm doing. I'm not letting my emotions take over to the port of like rocking out to the port or not singing properly or being too into it. You can control things and playing the mic and things. These are huge things for me.
You've nailed it.
Yeah.
It's like now you just, what you used to think was important and what you had to provide in a live show, the mm-hmm. energy and all that. It's like now it's my only focus is playing well.
Yeah.
And like trying to play as a band.
Oh yeah.
And like
yeah.
I feel listening. Like the first time ever, like I'm actually like, oh, okay, now I get it.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So like listen, really listen and let yourself get lost in the music as a full band.
Yeah,
and it changes everything.
Isn't
and
that
the other
great?
Thing too is that like now I'm like I just visualize stuff and I can play it.
That's a big thing.
I used to sit down and have to struggle to, and now
just
it's weird. Like I can
it,
think about it and I go like, oh, I know how to play that, something like that.
That's years of writing songs too, probably in your head where you can now put it to fingers, right?
Everything just makes sense and seems so much easier. Yeah. And then it was really, and I got to say, it was very flattering when Ralph James said that, to be honest.
Of course,
because
right.
I felt that way too. And mm-hmm. then that's when I turned to Bill and Ralph was there and I said, and I'll tell you, I said, you know what? I've been feeling the same way too. And then I also said, man, do I ever miss this?
Mm-hmm.
And do I ever grateful for Benel to have made a living from doing something like that? And
that.
I look at it now and I think, like, it's hit me so hard in the last 2 years about what a wonderful way to make a living.
Yeah.
To be able to play music on a stage, going around touring to these different towns, and and anybody that comes out to see you and you've touched them with something that you've written, it's got to be the most beautiful feeling.
Absolutely.
And playing live on stage and that energy is something I think I grossly over...
took advantage of maybe younger age?
That's right.
Yeah.
I really kind of took advantage of it, and I don't think that I appreciated it for what it really was back then.
Yeah.
And now I look at it and think like I would trade everything to be able to have a career where you could really live off of just playing live and have that type of career. Because what a beautiful thing.
Oh, absolutely. Life is all perspective too. Like you've
come to be able to play music.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, if you say, take into a guy who works in a burger joint.
Yeah.
He'd been flipping burgers for 10 years and then he gets to work out front in the cash register. And he goes, fuck, I hate the cash register. I'd rather be back flipping burgers.
Oh, yeah.
So then you just go back and go, oh, I love this. You know what I mean? Like, you've gained perspective in something that is completely what you thought you knew, and then you go and do something else.
Oh,
you did a whole
bunch
of other stuff. You produced, you managed, you
do
all these
true.
Crazy things, and then you come back to music. The reason what started all
what
of
started
this,
all?
Yeah, where it started is
that's
playing
very
music.
Good point.
So then you bring it all back, and then you go, I like this now. And you know what? I'm in that barrier too. And whether or not for me making money, it's like I just enjoy making music. I put myself in a position where I can just make music.
Yeah.
I don't need to impress anybody. You know what I mean?
Like, no, you've made a good point about, you know, it's maybe just gone right back to the beginning for me, which is where I think maybe you go through this, you're in a band, it leads to producing, it led to managing Sum 41. But then I think I was always getting further and further and further away from me as a musician.
Yeah,
I was suddenly becoming a musician for other people or writing with them. And I think I lost it. And then when it suddenly from the Indie Rock Hall of Fame.
Yeah, there you go.
Which is somewhere.
Spurred it on, yeah.
Gave us that plaque. It reeled me back in, mm-hmm. and it was, and it's the most wonderful thing to have been brought back into it. Mm-hmm. You're right. And brought mm-hmm. me back to where I started. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. man, we just played a show at Young Dundas Square.
Oh, when?
Just in September.
Okay, yeah.
And it was very full. And I thought that nobody would be there. And mm-hmm. people came out, and it's been, what, 10 years since we were a band or more?
Yeah.
No, it's been more than that. And to have that. And then I turned to Bill after, and I said, Bill, we have to write more songs. Like, mm-hmm. this is just too beautiful way of, like, yeah. I can't, this is what it's all about.
Yeah.
These people coming out to see us, yeah. singing along to these songs, and us playing as like this great band that I feel like we've never been this good before, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I'm like,
yeah.
Now, like, why not do something now if we're feeling this way?
Sure, yeah. And I think, in take this in the spirit, but you have a cluttered life. Your life is cluttered. Like, you have a lot going on in your life. Seems like you always have a lot going on in your life. Right? So the fact that you can bring it down to just something that's like, so, this is it. This is the box that I want to do.
Yeah, I know.
You'd want to be there forever, right? Like, in a way, rather than dealing with all the other pressures in life.
I think I have a cluttered life because I think I'm really afraid a lot. I'm scared. Mm-hmm. I'm always scared of not being able to make a living.
Yeah.
It's always scared me. It scared me from the day I graduated from school. Mm-hmm. I thought, it's always really haunted me about, oh my God, what if I stop making money? That really, really has always been a driving factor. Yeah, and I think that's what I do, is I react out of fear.
Yeah, you keep a lot of things and different things, yep. And then sometimes it gets too much.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, you manage it well. I mean, do you find yourself managing it better now?
No. I'm far worse at it now. It's funny you said that, because that's another thing that's happening. Is like, I look back and I think, I don't know how I was juggling and wearing all those different hats back then.
Yeah,
but right now,
yeah.
I can only concentrate on one thing at a time. Anything else, I start getting stressed out.
Yeah. I had a funny conversation. I don't know if you remember this. When we were going to a Christmas party. And you're talking about, like, this guy keeps calling me, and I can't get this part of this done. And I said, you know what? You need an assistant. You need a guy to answer your phone, to put them all your emails into one cohesive email. And then you're like, do you want a job? I'm like,
I
do not want
that
fucking job. No way do I want that job.
I don't know if I ever did get an
assistant. I like you. No, I think you started the management company around that time. You started. Maybe I want to take a little credit. You did sort of take a little advice and sort of brought some people to sort of help you manage.
Oh, thank you.
Because there's
a lot going on
there, you know what I mean?
There was, yeah. It's
you know,
got carried
just
away.
Keeping it all together. I don't know. And I for a second, like, because we toured together and we did a lot of traveling and got to know each other, I think, pretty good. And I thought, wow, that's a crazy life, you know? And that is a lot to go with, you know? And I thought, okay, this is... And I actually changed a little bit of my life around that, because I thought... I like to keep in things and compartmentalize things, different little things. I can't do it all. I'll freak out.
No, right. Yeah, that's how I am now.
You're doing it right now, right?
I will freak out, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how I lost it. I think I burned out or something. I don't know.
Yeah, you're feeling this thing. You're doing it because what you're doing right now.
I have a hard time answering a phone right now.
Yeah.
Because I answered so many when I was managing and stuff.
Yeah,
like, it's all I was doing was on the phone. And now I have this like weird rejection.
Yeah.
The second a phone rings, like I almost like get up and run into another room. I'm like, I'm not answering that.
PTSD.
I can't.
You got post-traumatic stress on the fact that you're like, oh, no, I don't want to talk and deal with this problem.
I'm in a corner shivering, curled up in a fetal position. Make the phone stop.
When did you move up here? Because I know you moved up here to do some kind of neat and new and exciting.
Yeah. Okay. So about the last 6 years, I've been producing records, working down in Toronto, and I had a studio up where Coalition Management
is
in that beautiful schoolhouse that they mm-hmm. have, and so I kept doing records, and there were a few that came, you know, through. Maybe three or four in the last 6 years that were real standout records to me, real standout musician songwriters, something that I really put my heart and soul into, that I really believed in. And you know that every one of them had the same story at the end. Like 6 months later, I would call them and be like, so, okay, we did the record. What happened? Mm-hmm, and they're like, mm-hmm. well, you know, we couldn't get Factor money.
Yeah.
And record labels aren't signing any bands and giving them development money.
Yeah, anymore.
And so we couldn't get a video done. We couldn't even get a website built. You know, like like all this stuff that record labels used to sort of develop bands, they would provide that kind of service. And now what's happening, and I've seen it happen too much, is that, man, if you don't get Factor money these days, then you're really, a band's paying for all this stuff on their own.
Yep.
And it's hard enough to write songs and, you know, to just go out and get enough money to go tour.
Just to play.
Most bands can't even afford to tour, right? You know this.
Oh, absolutely.
So now add to that the fact that they now have to go out somewhere and find money to make a video. They now have to go out there and start their own, like, websites. They have to do all their own social media. They need to develop social media content. Yeah. That all costs money.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so where the hell does that come from?
Mm-hmm.
And what's happened is, and I realized it after a while, was I thought, oh, okay, I see what's happening here. It's like the record labels sort of, like, very publicly announced that they were going to get out of the development game, that they were, you know, they used to be venture capitalists. They used to sign 50 bands a year, and if two stuck, then that would be worth the gamble on all the other 48, right?
Yes.
So they stopped doing that. Now their mandate is, go prove to us that you can sell out Lee's Palace, or, like, you know, go prove to us you can get 100 people out in the territory that you live in, and not just, like, you know, the one bar you play at, but at towns around.
Yeah.
And when you're doing that on your own, then come knock at our door, and then it'll give us proof that, you know, if it's working on that level and you're able to do it, then it's obviously connecting.
Yeah.
So, and then we'll take you to the next level.
Yeah.
But they're not in the development game. So how do bands get to that to that level? Well, it's not easy, you know that. And
yeah, they had to rechange and rethink how that was done, and YouTube,
and they had to,
and
they have to get
stuff.
Money.
Yeah,
so some people are, you know, this is what gave birth to a lot, you know, this whole, the way that people are, the onus is on them to sort of raise the money, is where those websites,
GoFundMe, Patreon, and
they've all, and Kickstarter,
yeah.
It's like they all came out of desperation there, because there's a lot of, like, there's a lot of industry that's in the creative side that have been playing this game where they're no longer funding a lot of stuff at a ground level, right? And that's why there's a lot of artists that are going out and trying to raise money on their own. So anyway, it dawned on me that there's a void here. There's a problem. There's a big, big problem, because recording studios, a lot, like, video companies that make music videos, or any video content companies, they're all looking to the bands to pay for this stuff. And the bands don't have the money, man.
That's, all they have is their content.
They don't have it. Yeah. They barely can make it out and make enough money to tour.
Yeah.
So this content the bands need has to come from somewhere else. Bands can't afford it. So stop pretending that a band is going to be able to afford that. Stop pretending that a management company is going to be able to afford it, because they can't either, right? They're just as broke.
Yeah.
And so are little indie labels. They all want to sign these bands. They all see these talent. They see the talent, but they don't have money. We all know this, right?
Yeah.
How many, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so this was my big defining moment of why I'm up here, is that I think that there needs to be a shift in where companies like recording studios and where we get our money from is not from bands anymore, because that's dying.
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
I'm with you, man.
Okay. Yeah. So why don't I go see if I can somehow figure out other revenue streams that could help pay for all this stuff that bands need, that management companies need, indie labels need.
Yeah.
They all need social media tools. They all need social media content.
Yeah.
And content costs money.
Yeah.
And they can't afford it. So why don't I go and find another way of finding monetary revenue streams to pay for this stuff? And why not hand it off and give it to these bands and management companies for free? Because they're the ones that are creating it in the first place, but they can't afford to pay for it. But if you can help pay for it, then that will help them launch a career, because they're the talent, they're the creative, they're the thing they are the thing that people buy into.
Yeah.
They are the create. They're the ones writing the songs, right?
Yeah.
And so stop going to them and trying to drain them of everything. Yeah. Go find it somewhere else. So
they provide the art. We need someone to provide the money to create right. the art. And we're
yeah. barking up the wrong tree. Yeah, we're asking the wrong people to pay for things. So I've come up with a company called Fuser, F-U-Z-R. Mm-hmm. And Fuser.com is a company that's going to go. And I have done a business plan with that I have gone over and over and over and over again. It's been rewritten and rewritten. I had a lot of people in the industry feed into this and help me out. But we have figured out a way of about 7 new revenue streams that we can get money that we do not, that we can get. And I'm not going to give you the secret of what my success or, you know, not that it is yet, but the plan is that we'll tap into these revenue streams. Tap into these other revenue streams. And ideally what we're trying to do is that as we start creating content, because it's all about creating content, and what I'll give you this much.
Content and feelings.
Content
the feelings, what you're giving is like the honesty and the feeling of that content.
Yeah.
You're not trying to like, you know, hey, look over here. You know.
Yeah.
You're not just filling that bucket full of content.
And the trick is this, and I'll give this much away.
Okay.
And this might even be too much. But
what a scoop.
It's all about sharing the content. See, that's where I'm going to get. I'm going to use that content that I'm going to help shoot all this content and provide this content for these bands, management companies, and indie labels. All I'm asking in return is you let me have ownership in that content too, so that I can go elsewhere and go and sell it, and I'll go make money there. And that will allow you to get this content for free. Yeah. So you're going to share this with me. Yeah. So you're going to bring, and that's all I'm going to say about
it. Okay, yeah, no, that's great. Yeah.
And I will say this, that this has been met with great enthusiasm in the industry. I think that people have said, look, Greg, like if you really pull this off, like this could be a real game changer. And I think it doesn't need to be a game changer. I think it's very, very necessary right now.
Yeah.
It's coming from a guy out of pure frustration, which was me, where I sat in Toronto for the last 6 years and saw a bunch of things that I put my heart and soul into, and I saw it go nowhere. And I thought, there's something broken here. Well, we all know that there's been something broken in the music industry for a while, but there's something very like that's deeper than that.
Yeah.
That there's some seriously good stuff getting missed here.
Yeah.
And something needs to change. And I have not felt more passionate about something.
I can tell, dude.
Like
you just sat up. Like I wish I could see you.
I know.
In there. Like,
I know.
Yeah, it's great.
I am so genuinely excited about this because it. And what a beautiful thing to be able to do.
You've come to a realization. You found something. You cracked a code in a way.
So I'm building a studio up here, and I've talked to Dustin about being involved in it, and I hope that we're all in the Sioux going to get together. And the reason I came up here is because of this. The university up here, Algoma University, has a music department, and the music department, I had come up here poking around because I wanted to create a commercial music production program that was part of their thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, bring kind of what's been happening at colleges
like
and whatnot.
Fanshawe-ish.
Yeah, yeah, that kind of thing to a university level. Yeah. So they met me with open arms and very enthusiastic, and we're proceeding and moving forward and developing this. Then out of that, I figured out that this program that I'm creating through the university is use these students to feed into a co-op of building Fuser. And up here, it just so happens there's this Mill Square property up here. It's an old, it's kind of like the Distillery District in Toronto, where there's a bunch buildings. And that has become this creative epicenter in the Sioux. And I'm putting my studio down there. And it's also going to be a festival grounds for music festivals, which will be up to 10,000 or 15,000 people. We're launching it next year with Kid Rock on the long weekend. So we're going to start building these festivals right there where I'm putting a recording studio. And the university already has their music department down there in one of those old buildings. So it's already all down there. And I thought, this is a place to launch this idea. Mm-hmm. Get these kids at the university and co-opt involved in this, in everything down there. Where else can you have... Do you have a festival grounds that are next to a recording studio that have a university music department and the conservatory of music all in the same building? Next, also in the same building is a 1,000 capacity venue called the Machine Shop. And I looked at it and I thought, this, where else can you ever find anything that's
ecosystem.
All in one property? Where you can build this sort of little epicenter where Fuser could grow out of.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
that's kind of why I'm up here.
I love that. You know, and the fact is a lot of people, you couldn't really do this in Toronto.
No.
You can't do this in Toronto.
I don't think you could.
People have it. I hate the term, but people use it. Everybody has a silo. This is my little silo. It's my little area. You can't come into my little silo because I have all
that's
my shit in here.
Point.
You can't have anything. So, but here, you can come in and sort of change the rules. Not break rules, but change the rules.
Okay. Or, okay, you know how you were saying earlier about, you know, what I was saying about going, getting back to the music and standing on stage and feeling so grateful that you could even be there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's also, there's something about moving back to the Sioux where Bill and I started.
Yeah.
And Bill Priddle's my bandmate and treble charger that I've known since I was, we grew up together since we were 3 years old.
Your parents made him join, right?
What?
Your parents made him join or let made you?
My parents and his parents were best friends.
Yeah.
That's right. It was like that we were in it. Yeah, we were made to be in a band since we were five.
Yeah, that's crazy. That's insane.
We signed contracts.
Yeah. He told me this story like, I don't want Bill to be in the band. He's got glasses. Remember that?
Probably.
Yeah, that's what you said.
And then I got scolded and grounded by my parents. Yeah. You're having Bill in the band. Okay.
All right. Better be good.
So he and I he's up here. And again, there's something about, like you just said that, silos and everybody's got their little thing down there. There's a lot of disconnection down there and everyone's got their little thing going. Mm. But again, up here, it's like, it makes me feel like, it's like, if you can make this work up here, then you'll be able to make it work anywhere.
Absolutely.
And besides, where else can you find a property like what I just said?
And if you have
that
proof,
doesn't exist.
You have that model that works. It's called, you know, the proof of concept. You've kind of taken this proof of concept in, it's the only place you could do it. Because it's a concept at this point. And this concept it mathematically should work. But if you tried that in Toronto, first of all, you'd have a bitch of a time trying to make it get it off the ground, and it wouldn't be the full realized.
And where
idea.
And where in Toronto do you have a 15,000 capacity festival
downtown.
Grounds that's right beside that's part of a university music program that's part of a conservatory of music that's got a venue, a 1,000-seat venue right there and a recording studio.
Yeah. Like, I mean, there's still like, you know, there's still like the cooperative labels like the Underground Operations and things like in Toronto that sort of went against the conventional rules of the record industry, right?
Yeah.
But this is taking it into a whole different...
I think it's recognizing where we are these days with technology. And one thing is that, like, look, everything revolves around social media content, right?
Yeah.
And social media content costs money.
Mm-hmm.
And
because you got to create it, and you got to do it.
Starving artists have always been starving artists.
Yeah.
Nothing's changed. The only thing that's changed is that the big bank with record labels has disappeared.
Yeah.
That's what's changed.
Yeah.
So they've left.
Yeah.
And now
they're
all
done.
You have is starving artists.
Yeah.
And how well is that going? Not so well.
So here's the thing I noticed when we were talking about how bands have to pay for their content and have to do things, is when they're put, the onus is put on them, they will dry up because the pressure's too much.
Oh, you know how many bands I've seen dry up?
I've seen it myself.
Can you imagine the pressure that's, keep going with that.
Yeah. So when a band has to say, okay, you've just made a good record. That's a good, pretty good record. Okay.
Pretty good record.
Pretty good record. It's got a hit on it.
Right, fucking undeniable hit.
It's going to be, we're going to be great. This is going to be great. I'm going to get you a publishing deal. You're going to make a ton of cash, right? And then cut 2-3 months later and it doesn't happen, which is fine. That's just the way society decided not to make you popular or successful. But you need to make another record. Okay, let's go do that. Well, I've been really busy trying to jump through all the hoops you've maybe wanted to jump through.
That's right.
So what do I want me to do now? I have to do what? Make another record? And recreate?
So do you remember
magic.
When videos popped up? Remember when? Okay, so I remember the big argument. A lot of bands rejected videos because it was a very weird concept to them because they thought, wait a second, so you're telling me like not only do I have to go write a hit record, but now I have to come up with a way of making myself look good and a video idea based on the song I just wrote, and you want us to come up with that too? So now we're taking on two roles here, right? And bands would really reject it. They'd be like, you know, what our music is what we're in. We're not in the business of like being on TV and like being actors in a video to be able to sell our songs.
Yeah.
And when you think of it, That is kind of a weird thing to ask a musician. Hey, yeah. Now, by the way, everybody, you got to now all be actors.
Yeah.
You're all, okay, it's not all just about people taking your music home and putting on headphones with no visual. Yeah. It's now you're all about the visual, too. Yeah. And if you don't have that, you're not going to sell records. And a lot of bands thought, like, what the hell? Imagine what that's like now.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so we were freaking out then. Now you have to wear every single hat. Not only do you have to write the hit song, you have to do the video. You have to come up with the video concept. You have to pay for that yourself.
Yeah.
You have to come up with all the social media content.
Yeah.
You have to organize all your social media, Twitters, blah, accounts, and you have to manage them every day, and you have to update them every day.
Yeah, yeah.
And look at the amount of work that's going into not just, what the hell happened to just being a musician? What the hell has happened?
Yeah. And when you do get that unicorn who is great at editing music and can record his own shit in his basement and can make his own content and all of a sudden have a good image.
Yeah.
That is probably your next Led Zeppelin, your next.
True enough.
But to finish my point, that's why you have YouTube stars. They have that person that does, you know, those snappy.
Yeah,
I'm going to talk about something, and you can see the edit because he's sitting there thinking about what the fuck he's going to say.
Yeah.
And then he'd say something, and then, like, my son loves YouTube. He likes watching these dudes talk, like PewDiePie and all these people, and you're like, this guy's just talking. Like, I feel like such an old guy.
Because
I'm like,
really,
what the fuck is he talking about?
I know.
The whole new thing.
It goes into what you were saying about.
Now it's content. It's all about content.
All about content. Now, you know what? And I don't... Okay, it's fine. I think that our generation, or this new generation, they've grown up to sort of think that way. That's okay. But here's the reality, though, and it always will be, is that you still have to pay for it somehow. Mm-hmm. You always will have to.
So I'm saying,
look, it's hard enough that these bands, these poor artists, they have to wear all these hats.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fine. But here's the struggle. And what I'm trying to remove is...
Just give them a crutch.
I'm trying to give them a way to pay for it.
Yeah.
Look, dude, I know it's very hard, you know, for you to wear all these hats, musician, but what makes it even worse is you have to go out and pay for all this stuff.
Yeah.
And that's why it falls apart.
Oh, yeah.
It's not because they can't keep up with the Twitter accounts and their managing of their social media. It's because they run out of money. They can't. It all costs money. So now there needs to be a new system that provides this content to them. It doesn't also drain their wallet. That's why in the last 6 years, everything I've seen that I put my heart and soul into has gone away.
Yeah.
It's fallen apart. And it was always the same story. We didn't have money. Our record label didn't have money, our little indie label. Our management company didn't have money. And at the end of the day, we stopped getting factor, and therefore it dried up and our band's gone. And it's like, I'm like, that's it, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So that's it. It's like there's hardly any money out there right now, and if you don't get that factor, then you're pretty much done.
Now, do you think in another world, if the whole music industry exploded tomorrow and you got a chance to rebuild the industry,
from
mistakes too? Here's another thing: like the rules are, you can't use old games or old methods, right?
Yeah.
So just think what we have today, just now.
Okay.
Right. We have YouTube.
Yeah.
We have Facebook. We have Twitter, Instagram, all these things.
Yep. Podcasting.
It's right. Yeah. Podcasting was a huge thing for stand-up comedians. Like a lot of them made careers out of it.
That's true. There's a lot of comedy.
Completely like blow up the old game and say, remember, don't, like, here's that little beam of light. Forget everything that happened. Start fresh.
Okay.
How exciting is that? Because it's kind of what you're doing now. You've kind of said, fuck the old guard, fuck everything, we're going to do things this way now, we're going to use things, and this is what we're going to do, and here's our march toward success.
Yeah, that's it. You've nailed it.
So the whole idea of being able to like completely obliterate the old guard, which was actually in sometimes quite favorable to you, you know, it worked to your advantage.
No, but let me make one correction to that.
Okay.
Is that I'm not really saying that the old guard or the old system doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that it operates at a different level now, and it's harder to get through
that.
The door of what that used what that is now.
Yeah.
But not saying, like, obviously they're still selling lots of records. There's a lot of Justin Bieber records and like Katy Perry. People still buy CDs. There's still money to be made in the music industry, and there's certainly money to be made by playing live and getting through the Live Nation door, right?
Sure,
all of those doors are much harder to get through than they were 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And even to open that Live Nation door, all of it is going to take So I don't think that I think that those the old guard, it still works out there.
Yeah, to an extent.
I just think that there is a big disconnect between starting at the bottom and getting to where that door is to be opened.
Sure,
and that's what I'm trying to fill in is thing. So I'm saying that the way that that used to operate, the way that the development game with the way the music industry used to develop bands, that has disappeared, and that's something that's been very broken and needs to be fixed.
Right. So if you have $1 million behind you, performer X, you're going to have a easier way to get into today's standards because you have $1 million behind you.
Hell's yeah. Or no, right?
You know, but if you're a musician Y who's terribly talented, a little aloof, has no idea how to turn on a computer, that person doesn't have a fighting chance like the dude with $1 million behind him.
Oh, but what's well, what's even more sad is that it's the person that has a lot of talent and has all kinds of great songs behind them, and they know how to operate social media well, and they are very good at it, but they simply don't have the money to keep the content going, and everybody needs content, and they run out of money, and that's the thing that breaks my heart, are those people that go away, and you think, okay, there's something very wrong with that, because the big machines are missing that person, because they're not even hearing about them, and they're not hearing about them because these people can't do it all. There's so much money that's needed that... You know, it's not getting better. It's getting worse for how much social media you need to be feeding every day, right? It's not becoming smaller.
Yeah.
It's becoming more and more and more. Now you got to be taking pictures in, and you know, if you know you're not blabbing something really intelligent every day on Twitter of your little line, your little lines, your nuggets of genius on Twitter, you got to dream up one of those every day. Yeah. Then you got to go take a picture for Instagram of where you've been there and some kind of nugget that's attached to that, that's some type of genius thing that's going to go viral. Oh, and then you have to come up with a video that's also going to be so genius and have something about it that it's going to go viral. And that costs money to shoot. And then you got to get a song that's so good that friends are going to tell friends they're going to tell friends and that costs money to record, and that fucking has a hell of a lot of work to do. Like, and it's not getting better; it's getting worse.
Yeah,
like how much these people need have more to fill, just in order to like get people to look at them.
Yeah, I work with a band right now, and they have a social media person, and they deal with everything. But still, like you say, it's still struggling to get a tweet and then get a Facebook update every day, all the time. And I do my best. Like, I record every show video-wise, and so they have live music to watch, and it's all on YouTube and things.
See, they have live music to watch. Yeah. How many bands, they can't even afford to recording and editing their live shows
every night. You know, so the sound guy comes out with those cameras over there and sets them up. And they don't look amazing.
But who cares?
But you get three-camera shot, and you can get an image, and you get a view of this person playing live. And
like, beautiful.
And when I was talking, that was this band called the Small Town Pistols. Okay. And they used to be the Wilkinsons. They had the single 26 cents. And they were, you go find them, and they're called the Small Town Pistols. They're on 604 Records. I was talking, this pitching this idea to Tyler about let's sell the live shows, music. Let's see if we can sell a few here and there, $5 or whatever. And Tyler's girlfriend hit it on the head and said, well, what about video? And we looked at each other and went, oh, nobody want to buy video. Are you kidding me? Nobody want to buy video. And then, so now we just put it on YouTube for free.
Yeah.
And it's a nice little way of people to watch the show. And it gives you a view at it, because you know how many bad YouTube videos you've seen. It's just from the camera and it looks like shit and it sounds like shit. And this is a good representation because it's 3 or 4 cameras, you know. And this is sort of like you're saying, it goes into that content. You need something to look at. Cost them nothing.
No, but
it would. They're lucky they got me. I'm telling you, Tyler Wilkinson.
You see, they're lucky that they have somebody that's doing that for them.
Yeah,
a lot of bands would have to sometimes hire that person.
Yeah.
And that costs money.
Again, absolutely.
All of which, you know, I keep coming back to, which is why Fuser exists.
Yeah.
And I hope can go and make a difference.
I'm really excited about this.
Thank you.
It's a good name.
You're going to become part of it.
All right. Well, I want to be part of it, man. Cool. Well, awesome. Well, you know, like I love talking to you about music, because you've been from the beginning of like the crash of the record industry.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean?
Did I ever ride that one out?
To when bands in the early 2000s just got dropped away.
I saw the Sum 41 caught the very tail end of when record companies were spending stupid money on bands that they had just signed.
And you got them there.
Case in point was that MTV tour where Island Def Jam president. There was three bands on this MTV tour. They had just been signed to, all three had just been signed to Island Def Jam. And what does the president do? About 4 days into the tour, this bus full of strippers shows up, and it's been paid for to travel with the tour for a week. with the other, and it's like, welcome to the label, boys.
Oh my
and I was
God.
Like, I look back on that and I think, okay, that was the very last example of when record companies were spending. Yeah, money was out of control, and they were doing stuff like that. That does not exist these days.
I had Cameron Carpenter on the show, and he lived through it from the 70s, man. Like, he went all the way through. Like,
really saw it.
He was an A&R guy all the way through.
He's
the
a 80s. Survivor, Cam
Dude,
Carpenter.
And you know what? He's a great guy still. He's the same Cam Carpenter I knew like
anybody
20
that's
years ago.
Still in the music industry now is
okay
Survivor. And they'll always know how to carve out an existence in the music industry, and I just love these people, and I have such appreciation for them because they really are.
Yeah.
They're the real deal.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you can make it now, and Cam has done this since, you just said, the 70s.
Yeah.
I remember going to his office, and I forget where he was working at the time, but he had a wall full of pictures of him with all these people that he had been associated with over the years. And I was looking at it thinking, like, wow, dude, like, you have such a great, great life on your wall here. Look at what you have done.
And he is so humble and nice, and he's a fan of music. He loves music.
You know, I wonder if that, you know, there's a common denominator.
Yeah, yeah.
How about the fact that we're all a really serious lover of music?
Like,
what did I say when I came in here? I was almost getting emotional about how important going back to music is.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It's because, you know, I think deep down, like, we got that bug when we were, I don't know, when we were born. I don't know where it came from, but I've always had it.
Yeah, I was talking to Sergi from Sem-I-Am, and he called it an unhealthy relationship with music.
Oh yeah, well, boy, is that unhealthy.
He's a little
cynical. Don't you even remember, like, when you were a little kid?
Oh,
like, my mom says to me, my mom and dad have said to me, like, we had three siblings, me and two sisters. They said that I was the only one in the back seat if the radio was on, that I would be singing along to the song.
Yeah.
Like, barely after I could learn to talk.
Yeah, definitely.
And they noticed, they said, like, oh, he really reacts to music, but the other two, like, it's on the radio, but it's not going into their heads.
It's not there.
But it was going into my head.
Yeah.
So I always think, like, I always think you're born with something. Like, I think you're born with that. Like, you hear music.
Yeah.
I think you hear music really early on as a kid, and it affects you.
I was trying to get into something, like, I was trying to get on a trip about, like, I think I tried for a second to think, I think everybody has it in them a little bit.
Yeah.
It's just this something that how they perceive and how they see it will then make them go on to do it. And some very well and some not so well.
But
so
I ask myself about that question, though, and I've heard other people say it, that, like, you can have three kids in a back seat with a radio on all around the same age.
And somebody's
singing,
and
only one
of
them, is it making sense to them?
Yeah.
And the other two kids, it could be completely irrelevant of what's going on. Now, tell me why that happens.
I don't know. I want to say that there's something chemical in you from being a baby that
that's what I think. You're born with something, or I don't
that
know what
chemically
it is.
Changes how you see things. You're right. You know, I've talked to people on this show, and I've talked to people in life who, if they can't write a song, they go bonkers. They go crazy.
Yeah,
they can't.
Go.
They feel so left, and, you know, and truthfully, I, with a little bit of my own personal, I tried to sort of step away from the whole being too emotional about music.
Oh, yeah.
Because I thought, if I'm too caught up in this love of music, then maybe I don't love it as much as I used to.
Oh, isn't that sad?
Because I wanted to give me something back. So then I just tried to reinvent the whole idea for myself to say, well, and it sounds like you already did it yourself. You sort of went, you really appreciated something. But I kind of stepped away from it a little bit to
I think you have to. Something.
You have to. Yep. You have to give it perspective and say, this is why I really like making music now. I didn't like making music because someone said, you know, you should probably do it this way and that way and this and that, which is crazy enough to say, but that was kind of your job sometimes.
Yeah,
It's guiding people through their songs, you know? And then for me, it was like,
and not
you
always
know,
for the right reasons sometimes.
Sometimes
too.
You're right. You know, it's
you
true.
You know, you lose your soul a little bit. I remember I've said that. I felt like I was losing my soul.
Yeah.
I felt like I was starting to listen to me. You said it. I think there was a point where I think I started, like, hating music. And I thought, what the hell has happened to me?
It's become
where
your industry.
Did I start hating music?
Yeah.
And now,
and I've always
said
this.
You said you take a step away. You take a step away,
move back,
and suddenly you're like, you're in love with music
again.
Because you removed all these, like, weird.
And you're coming in with a different perspective, and a different view, and a different look, and a different appreciation about what you've come into. You can have the experience of the many years you've been playing music to go,
oh, I see the triggers around here. I see what's going to sort of, and you can play, not the game, but you can plan out your moves more effectively because you're not using emotions and craziness and I want to be famous and I want to be Bon Jovi, you know.
Or not only that I want to be famous, you know, the thing that was the killer for me is like you have to go and write something that's going to make money and there's other people depending on it.
Yes.
That's when everything changes.
Yeah.
And I remember that, like, I went from like, oh, do I ever want to be in a band and like I want to be a rock star and all that dreaming as a kid where you lie. And then suddenly it becomes like this humongous pressure. You know what it's like.
Yeah, absolutely.
Suddenly, like, especially if you've had a hit, and don't get me wrong, I am grateful that we were even able to have a song that was on the radio. But it also opened up a whole different set of number of pressures.
Because people want to create that magic in the bottle again.
They okay, kid, now keep them coming.
Yeah.
It's like, say what? Yeah, keep them coming. And you're in the studio now in 4 months from now. You just came off tour from the first. So write the next hit song. Mm-hmm. There better be three of them. Okay, see you in 4 months. It's like, holy shit.
You remember, you probably do remember this, but when you moved into my studio to do pre-production, you and Bill looked at each other and you go, Bill, like, how many songs you got, Bill? And Bill's like, I don't know, I got two or three. How many you got? And you go, I got nothing.
I got nothing. Because nothing's going to kill your writing spirit more than, all right, give us three more of those or you're done.
You were freaking out. I remember it so vividly because you're like, I got nothing. I got no music.
Yeah.
But you know what? That American Psycho came out of that.
In my spirit.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, just look in your face like, I got desperation.
It was panic. Yeah.
Panic and desperation.
Boy, it just never changed, eh? Yeah. And like, there's something wrong about that, too.
Yeah, yeah. You know, in all honesty, you probably could have twiddled a little bit away in you, but you were so cluttered with your life, you forgot to write songs.
I know,
doing other things. You know what I mean?
I know.
But the thing is, that's what makes you inherently you, is you need a little bit of chaos in your life to get things done.
Yeah.
You know?
I guess everybody's got the thing that keeps them going.
It's a little bit of chaos and a little bit of uncertainty, you know? And we went through so much crazy shit.
Like, I know.
Remember that Snow record? We did the Icon record.
Oh, God, remember that?
That was chaos. That was fucking chaos.
Shan. Who was doing crack out in the driveway.
It was excuses. I got to go warm up my car.
The guns. Then we go out there to be sound asleep. What? The guns?
The guns.
In the trunk?
The cops. No, under the fucking mixing board.
Oh, yeah.
Bum, 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 bum. Hide the guns.
Hide
and we're
the
looking
guns.
At each other going, the guns? What are you talking about, the guns? There's a bag, a pillowcase full of guns right by my feet where I'm recording.
Right. That's right.
That was insane.
And how about every day, like, I won't say who, but there would be a certain part of the family would show up and be like, they'd spread all the goods out on the bedroom, on the bed. Were you ever part of that? Take your pick, boys. It was like, you know, the loot from what was stolen the day before.
Oh, no, no. I didn't know. No. Remember we all tried to go get IMAX? We're maybe talking out of school now, but we all went to this crazy Italian bar to go buy IMAX. And the guy's on the phone going, they want IMAX.
What are you talking about? What do you mean IMAX?
You went trying to get stolen goods from this one shop.
Oh.
And you're trying to get computers. You're like, we want IMAX.
Oh, that's right. And we were like, promised to. Yeah, that's right.
They got PCs. No one wants PCs. We want IMAX.
We wanted IMAX. Oh, yeah. I thought you meant IMAX, like the movie.
No,
IMAX.
No. Yeah, well, you got
IMAX.
Yeah, no, IMAX. What? They say they want IMAX.
No,
I don't know what it means.
No, we only got boxes of 50, like, windows.
He had some crazy stories, too, in the rock and roll story. I'm trying to get him on the show.
Oh, that guy's a legend.
Snow is impossible to nail down. He's doing a new record.
He's one of the funniest people I've ever.
Absolutely.
Remember how funny he was?
That guy had stories. For years.
And then we find out that, remember, he's written a screenplay that was going to be a movie of his life. His life is insane, eh?
Yeah.
Like, you and I got to hear it.
Oh,
like, nobody
just a
even
fraction.
Knows how insane that guy's life was and how fascinating he is. And that guy is smart and funny.
Yeah.
And like,
he's a great actor.
A great actor.
Yeah.
I really, really enjoyed those times, except for MC Shan that would fall asleep doing
smoking crack
in the driveway.
And he got mad at me when I showed up at 2 in the afternoon to pick something up. Like, what are you doing here? I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm just picking something. I'm like, yeah, get out of here. I'm sleeping. He's like, fuck. Well, I remember there's one moment. Actually, it was so funny because you were like, I'm not going near that fucking crazy house anymore. And it was, I used to show up at 8 at night and work till 5 in the morning. And you got me the gig. And you were sick and tired of actually picking me up. So you gave me your Jetta.
Oh, yeah. You ended up just keeping it.
Yeah. I kept the car. So I get your car for free.
Yeah,
and I'm driving
right.
around. It's certified. And I got a car now. So we're driving to the studio. And then it was like he listening to the like rolling credits of like Resident Evil the game, and Chan's going, "We gotta steal that." And I'm like, "What? What are you talking about?"
the end credits song. Yeah,
let's take that. We're gonna take
sampled
that.
It.
He's like, "What? What's going on here?" He was such a loopy dude too.
Oh, yeah,
but
yeah.
Obviously brilliant. But just fucking,
still alive.
I don't know if he's still alive.
I don't know.
He told us the story. We're going to get coffee or something. We're talking about getting checks for $10,000. We got checks for $10,000. That was chump change.
Oh, I know, man. Yeah, because he was all part of the Informer stuff.
That's right. He wrote Informer and gave, you know, whatever that part of it. But yeah, just that whole idea and just being connected to that was like life altering for me. And you introduced me to the Sum 41 guys. And that was something that I later on in life was like completely, you know, and I know it ended sour with you guys, but those guys were ever so loyal to me. They put me on, this guy who's 35 years old, take him to Europe and open up for them.
Oh, yeah, that was. You're
right.
He was
very loyal, you know. And when I, you know, I had some health issues, Derek called me. You know, it was these moments like, oh, these are my friends. You know what I mean?
Nice.
Like, these are people who I, you know,
yeah.
Dave's impossible to get a hold of still. He's rejoined.
Back in the band, though.
Back in the band, yeah. 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 So. Who knows, right? Who knows where it leads, you know? Life is insane, you know, and
yeah.
You know, we've lived through it and we've done it, and I'm really happy that you're up here and happy and you're married.
Well, yeah, well, not married, but
married.
Might as well be. With a 12-year-old girl.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Life is completely.
I know, it's really changed, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
You it's know, like, how'd I get there? What the hell happened there?
You're not, you know, we were all selfish musicians for a while, you know, we all lived through that. And then you start realizing, wait a minute, I don't want to be a dick anymore. I don't want to like offend anybody.
Yeah,
or
other things become more important.
Yeah.
But I think we kind of like, we held that part of our lives off long enough
to
have enough fun.
We got away with it for a long time. Yeah.
And then it gets to the point where it's like, okay, this is like, I need something else, like with a little bit more meaning in my life, like a family.
And you're home, and you have family here.
Yeah, I have family here. I was raised in the Sioux. It's a different city than when Bill and I grew up here. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
But you know what? I feel like there's an opportunity here. It just felt right with everything that was going on, and I thought, why not go give this a couple of years? You know, go give it a couple of years, try and launch this thing.
Yeah.
So far, so good. And if the worst thing that comes out of it is a new music program at the university up here, then great.
Good
at least I contributed
you.
That.
Like I said, I really appreciate coming on the show. It's so good to see you after all these years. Last time I saw you was in the lobby at York University when you were doing your show Disband, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And that thing's ended, right? It's gone?
Yeah, that's gone.
Yeah.
That's the day that Bell bought Much Music was the day it ended.
Oh, really?
I literally showed up at Much Music and was told by one of the producers, like, oh, the show's done. It's like, I was like, what? Why? You know, the show actually was like doing like medium well.
Yeah.
It wasn't like the lowest rating.
Sure.
It was like right in the middle. And I guess supposedly what happened was Bell bought Much Music, or off, they bought CTV, which owned
Much
Music.
Yeah.
And overnight, the first thing they did was they stopped all domestic, like, local productions.
Really?
At Much Music. And
that's kind of what they fostered, like, over the past 10 years.
That's what they fostered.
Yeah,
and that was killed overnight. And from that point on, I don't think there is any local productions at all on that station anymore.
Yeah.
It's all shows that are like, have you seen what Much Music
plays? I don't watch Much Music.
Well, the TV shows, there's no local production shows. It's just all, they play The Simpsons, and they'll play these shows that are on, like, they're all, like, American-based shows, pretty much.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
There's no, like, Much Music shows anymore.
Much Music
So it was
presents.
Killed. Everything was killed.
Yeah, I wonder why. Well, I mean, they have a reason.
Because it's too much money, I guess. It's easier to just buy it from the States.
At least it has ratings. It has that
and it has
there.
Ratings,
yeah.
And it's already proven itself down there. And it's.
Where do you stand on all the Canadian content malarkey? Are you?
I don't know why. Is that a big issue
is
again
Is that an
right
issue
now?
Still? Are we still in that issue of Canadian content?
I don't hear a lot of people debating it. I don't know.
They follow the rules though, right? Like, it's still whatever.
You know what? I think these days things are so global. It doesn't really matter anymore.
Right.
It's that's interesting. You just brought that up because that's why you don't hear about it anymore, because I don't think it matters anymore. We all exist on a global level now. So Canadian content or not,
you still
have to go out there and make it, man. Like on a global basis, or you're not going to make it.
Well,
it's funny.
I wish you all the luck because, you know, we were always so close and good friends, and we traveled around, and then we sort of...
And I got to say, Simon, you are definitely one of the greatest survivors.
Oh, thank
and,
you.
And, like, when you told me that you had this podcast, first of all, I'm really into podcasts lately. And then, sure enough, you pop up with one, And I thought, that makes perfect sense that you would do that. That's like you talk about the drive I have. You have the same drive, brother.
Mm-hmm, thank you. I appreciate you saying that.
And like you popping up with this, I thought, see, there it is. People that know how to stay relevant, how to keep afloat, and you're one of them. You always have been.
Well, thank you so much.
That's probably why we still know each other.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. That's right. It's just, people come in and out of this business so fast and move on, and you know.
Just saying, like, I wouldn't even hesitate. Like, if I could turn this Fuser thing into anything that could afford to hire anybody, mm-hmm. like, you'd be one of the first people I'd come to.
Because
Because I know that you're one of these people that always keeps afloat anyways.
We'll try to keep it going. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You're one of these friends I've known that have stayed with it. Mm-hmm. We both have.
Oh, yeah.
So keep up the good work. Yeah, we got staying power.
Yeah, definitely. And I like the fact that you've reinvented something.
Hopefully. I haven't done
it
yet.
You know, well, it doesn't matter. You've made the effort to reinvent, because you could just stay in Toronto and say, oh, I'm just gonna ride this out, you know, and maybe something will happen. You took your destiny.
I would love to be able to write an album again.
Of course. Well, you know what? You've put yourself in that position where you can.
I think so.
You know, and that is amazing.
Get out of the rat race.
Yeah.
Get up to where you were raised, mm-hmm. and go back to music where you've started and what you loved, and go write a great. And you know, again, I gotta say, there's another thing that's happened since I moved up here is I've never written more songs since I got up here.
Amazing.
I gotta say, there's something about what you said about remove yourself, take a step back, and get out of it. I can't say enough about how important that is sometimes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Just take a step back, man. Get out of that routine that you're in and watch what happens.
Oh, yeah.
Throw yourself into something else and watch what happens.
Yeah, well, that's a good note to get off on.
Yeah.
All right, okay, cool.
All right, brother.
That was Greg Norrie, everybody. Greg Norrie is probably the most enthusiastic person on the planet. He's very positive, and he, you know, like all successful people, he picks himself up, dusts himself off, and he keeps on moving. And that's why he is who he is. It's Greg Norrie, man. Come on. Everybody, don't forget about the show, January 27th at the Central at 603 Markham. January 27th is one of the first shows that you, or maybe even the last podcast shows that you'll actually ever see. I'm just trying it out. If it sucks, it sucks. It sucks. I don't, you know, what do you want me to do? I can't make it any better. And I want you to come see it. You never know. You might see me, you know, completely explode on stage. Who knows? The doors are at 5:30. So, and they have food there. And I've seen the menu, and it looks pretty darn good. And it ends at 8. So it's not like a big commitment. Okay. Thanks again to Deathwish Coffee for sending me coffee. And I'm going to miss it. I'm crying on the inside. Thanks to InsideRecorders.com, Musician's Friend, Amazon. Don't forget about the Apolog shop. Go to apolog.ca/shop and go buy a shirt and pre-order a new acoustic album. Don't forget to go to patreon.com/apolog. I think I forgot to say that at the start. Where you can pledge as much as you want. You can cancel any time, and it supports my gas fees and my hosting fees. And the current patrons right now are Michael Pitts and Curtis Pippin. Like the show on Facebook, facebook.com/apolog pod. Follow me on Twitter at simonhead666. You can go to iTunes and subscribe, rate, and review the show. And I would really appreciate that, too, if you did that. It'd be very cool. Before I finish off, I'm going to preview another song from my upcoming acoustic album. This is a bit of a sad ditty, and it isn't finished yet, but I might as well play it because it's my show. There you go. Everybody, the song is called The Loss, and it was originally recorded for a record called Dial 9 for a Line, and it is a different realized version of this song, and here it is. Thanks for listening, everybody. See you next week. Your blessings, maybe just once in a while. Check the rear mirror, called it 7:03. Honestly, tired, scared, alone. I'm must admit, you're brave. Silently screamed in rage. And hide the thoughts that hurt a lot. Unwind in slow decline. We're all here. Principles won't help the sorrow. Things will look good tomorrow. You drive and I'll steer. It was a long, hard winter, and it was you in the center. It was impossible to wonder why you checked in to check out. I would crawl to your intentions just to see you when we have grandchildren. Eager for attention, with no hope, I carry on. Now it's all done. Comments placed it all in haste, and all roads lead to home. Comments placed it all